This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And this is James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com, and we both welcome you back to yet another very important episode of The New World Next Week. This is our weekly video series that, of course, you can check out and get high-quality, low-quality video as well as audio by going to NewWorldNextWeek.com. We're going to get immediately into it and pick up with some updates, of course, that we hit last week on the situation in Egypt and just all the geopolitical situations that tie in. And a story that I saw yesterday in print in the New York Times really caught my eye, because as soon as I saw the subject's last name, I knew that we were in some sticky situations here. But let's take it from the CIA's favorite newspaper, the Washington Post. Obama turned to envoy who could speak to Mubarak as a friend. When it was time to give Egypt's embattled leader a gentle nudge, Obama picked a seasoned diplomat who could deliver the message as a close friend. Frank G. Wisner, W-I-S-N-E-R, a former U.S. ambassador to Cairo, has known Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak for decades and has long advocated strong U.S. ties with him. The White House dispatched Wisner to Cairo to, quote, add his perspective to our analysis on current developments, so said a State Department spokesperson. Details of Wisner's conversation with Mubarak were not disclosed, but an administration official said the envoy sought to impress upon the leader the need to both declare he would not seek re-election and to step aside immediately in favor of a transitional government. Former U.S. government officials who have worked with Wisner, age 72, said the retired diplomat developed a close relationship with Mubarak during his assignment in Egypt as an ambassador from 86 to 91. After his retirement from the State Department, Wisner worked for Patton Boggs, a Washington lobbying firm that has represented Egypt in the past. He also served on the board of Egypt's largest bank, Commercial International Bank Egypt SAE. It was not the first time that a U.S. administration had called on Wisner to intervene in a foreign crisis. In 2005, the George W. Bush administration appointed the New York native as a special U.S. representative to international talks on Kosovo's future. The negotiations ended with Kosovo's declaration of independence. And this article ends, Wisner is the son of the well-known U.S. intelligence officer Frank Wisner Sr., who joined the Office of Strategic Services, the OSS, the predecessor of the Central Intelligence Agency, the CIA, and was partly the inspiration for the character Edward Wilson in 2006 film The Good Shepherd. James, this is the name that struck me as soon as I saw it in print, and I knew that this guy, the son, is CFR and a well-connected elite, and of course, both left and right administrations go to him, and that he is the son of Frank Wisner Sr., a co-founder of the CIA, a co-founder of Operation Mockingbird, known as the media's infiltration, or rather the intelligence agency's infiltration of the media. And you can even learn a heck of a lot more about this guy in a fantastic book called The Old Boys by Burton Hirsch, The American Elite and the Origins of the CIA. We'll include some other updates regarding the Egyptian situation. Of course, they've always been the go-to place to disappear people in the so-called extraordinary rendition program that, again, knows no party bounds. So, James, please, your take on this.
Right, absolutely. Well, there's no doubt Mubarak was a brutal dictator and that Egypt was a terrible, tyrannical regime. So the fact that it's being overthrown again, it's a good thing. But again, this story shows another way in which the global power elite are trying to stack the deck or set the table in such a way that the situation collapses in their benefit. And it's interesting, I never thought I'd agree with Henry Kissinger, but his assessment of this when he was talking to Bloomberg earlier this week was right on. He was saying that this is just the first act in the first scene of a play that's going to be developing over the course of months, if not years, and we have to wait to see how things turn out before we understand what this is really all about. And of course, he wants it to turn out in favor of his CFR Bilderberg trilateral cronies, but the point is well taken that this is very much up in the air right now. And of course, we see with Wisner being inserted into the situation and El Baradei being inserted into the situation, we see basically they're trying to make sure that no matter what happens, they have their finger in the pie. if Mubarak remains in power, then their puppet remains in power. And if he gets ousted, then hopefully they can put in another puppet to take his place. But it does show that in these times of great uncertainty, there is that moment where all bets are off the table and anything could happen. And it really is up to the Egyptian people at this point. And let's hope that they won't accept some globalist stooge puppet to come in and start manipulating them. And of course, the globalists will try everything at their disposal and try a lot of different ways to do it. But there really is a chance for change at this moment. So let's hope that it can be maintained without slipping back into a status quo that only benefits the rich power elite.
I would have to say, just to also wrap up this story, that one, our good friend Richard Grove of TragedyandHope.com has done great work on the history of the OSS, CIA, and the Wisners in particular. And the other would be that I know I found myself going to the Council on Foreign Relations and the Financial Times as this situation unfolds to get a sense of what the elites are talking about. So that would always be a good tip for folks out there, is to go see what the elites are talking about. And generally, that usually shakes out to be the way things go. So having said that, let's now move to our second unbelievable story from Raw Story. Rumsfeld to receive Defender of the Constitution Award. Former U.S. Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld will be honored with the Defender of the Constitution Award at the Conservative Political Action Conference, CPAC, an annual event attended by numerous conservative activists, journalists, and politicians. WorldNet Daily columnist Brad O'Leary and American Conservative Union Chairman David A. Keene will present the former Defense Secretary with the award on February 10th. Rush Limbaugh got the award last year. And as if you needed any reminder, Rumsfeld, who was Secretary of Defense under Bush from 2001 to 2006, oversaw the invasions of Afghan-Iraq, and he was replaced by the still current Defense Secretary, former CIA operative agent Robert Gates, after a number of generals called for his resignation. We should also point out that, of course, the ACLU and numerous other organizations called for the ouster and the prosecution of Rumsfeld for being essentially anti-constitution. Unfortunately, in this list of speakers that are going to be at this CPAC conference is the usual gang of right-wing, reactionary, fake conservative Tea Party folks like Bachman and Coulter and Romney and Cheney and Gingrich and Palin. But unfortunately, in that mix is also Ron Paul. So hopefully he can either use that opportunity to really shed a light on what's going on with the geopolitical situation and the economic situation, or he can, like many other organizations and groups, decide to not go to it. James?
Right. Well, you say unfortunately, I say thank God he's there, that there's somebody who actually is in defense of the Constitution who will be there and will be able to demonstrate exactly what a ridiculous idea this is. I mean, oh my God, Donald Rumsfeld getting a Constitution Award. And at some level, all of this is just a sick joke that they play with each other about giving Kissinger and Obama the Peace Prize for not creating peace and giving Rumsfeld a Constitution Award for destroying the Constitution. But at some level, I mean, it's so ridiculous, it's so stupid that to point out the absurdity in itself is almost absurd, and I don't think it needs to be done. But it should be kept in mind that at last year's CPAC conference, Ron Paul gave a speech in which he said that the conservatives are not for militarism, and we don't want to be jotting around the world engaging in all these foreign wars. And he received standing ovation after standing ovation, and he won the straw poll for next Republican presidential candidate. So I think even the grassroots, know that this is not what conservatism is about, and it's not what represents them. And they can give each other whatever little medals and pins or whatever they want to bestow on each other, but it means nothing, and people aren't buying it.
So to maybe flesh out the other side of the fake political paradigm, we'll throw in just a quick little sidebar to this as well from Raw Story. Hundreds of liberal activists pledged to oppose Obama in 2012. Again, showing that what we see as mainstream Republican or conservatism, by no means is representing what those folks really want. And this shows that on the other side, our change agent, our Nobel Prince of Peace Prize, is by no means representing their constituency. So, James, we'll move to our third and final story, which I saw late last night as it was breaking in the UK, and we'll take it from Paul Joseph Watson. for yet another WikiLeaks bombshell, this time pointing to a 9/11 stand down. Newly released WikiLeaks documents concerning the activities of three Qatari men who conducted surveillance of the World Trade Center and boarded flights on the eve of the 9/11 attacks adds to the plethora of evidence that at the very least U.S. authorities were aware of the plot and deliberately stood down. The FBI has launched a manhunt for a previously unknown team of men suspected to be part of the 9/11 attacks, reports the Daily Telegraph. Secret documents reveal that the three Qatari men conducted surveillance on the targets, provided support to the plotters, and had tickets for a flight to Washington on the eve of the atrocities. 10 days later, they flew to L.A., where they stationed themselves in a hotel near the airport, which the FBI has now established was paid for by a convicted terrorist who also paid for their airline tickets. Hotel staff have told investigators they saw pilot uniforms in their room, along with computer printouts detailing pilot names, flight numbers, and times in packages addressed to Syria, Afghanistan, Jerusalem, and Jordan. The revelation that these men may have been involved in the pre-planning for 9/11 again highlights the fact that the plot was known well ahead of time. Whether they were double agents laying a trail for the attack to be later blamed on Muslim patsies, or they were genuinely a part of the plot, is immaterial. The fact that their behavior, amidst a myriad of other obvious indications that an attack was imminent, was not acted upon by U.S. authorities, provides yet more evidence of a stand down. James.
This is an interesting story, and there are some very interesting aspects to it, like the fact that these men apparently had a flight booked on the same, it was the same plane that was going to be used as on Flight 77 the next day. It was a different flight at that time, but they had a flight booked on that the day before 9/11, which they didn't show up on. They did not take that flight. So some interesting, very interesting points to this story. But I think there's a few salient points to be made. One is that this is another WikiLeaks that in some ways would serve to bolster the official story, and that it was the hijackers that were doing everything, and these men were helping them out. But I think this article that we're citing today puts it in good perspective, because it does represent another aspect of the 9/11 intelligence stand down and the military stand down, and the important points that show that there was government complicity in the attacks. But even with, looking at it in a larger sense, I haven't done any research on who these people are yet, and I'm going to be looking at 9/11 Blogger and History Commons groups in the next few days to see what they can dig up about these guys. But to me, it's extremely interesting that now 10 years later, we're just finding out, oh, by the way, there are other suspects of interests that were directly related to 9/11, which never came out in the 9/11 Commission report, has never been revealed by any source, official source to this point. So, even if you just want to go and believe that this is, these men were part of the attack, well, how come no government official or agency has said anything about it in all this time, and how come they haven't moved on these people? So, again, just so many aspects to this story.
Well, and as we were discussing over the 9th anniversary back the previous September, that of course if the commissioners themselves don't believe the report, then why on earth should we? So, James, as we wrap this 62nd episode of New World Next Week up, well, tell folks, I think it is sometimes difficult to find exactly what stories we want to cover to kind of get across what are the most important things going on. So, of course, there are times where we maybe don't do that or don't cover a story that folks would expect that we do or should. And I would just point again and remind folks that you and I each do our own weekly podcasts and radio shows. Your most recent episode is called Meet Rahm Emanuel, getting into the very important areas. And again, it's gangster in, gangster out. Rahm goes to Chicago, Daley comes to D.C., and it's, again, just the agenda rolls forward. I will also have this coming episode this week some updates on the story of John P. Wheeler III and more tie-ins and updates to that involve the son of our vice president here in the States and blunt force trauma and all sorts of other things surrounding this mysterious case.
Absolutely. So again, I hope people will stay tuned to MediaMonarchy.com and CorbettReport.com. So once again, James, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.